From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. As Hollywood gets back into production, all sorts of positions are being invented to enforce COVID protocols. Danica Kohler-Doman is a production supervisor now grappling with the challenges of being a COVID manager. She's handled three projects this year, including shoots for Netflix and Sony.
Yeah, it wasn't just down, it was down significantly.
There's so many moving pieces to an industry that already has a ton of moving pieces. So you just have to learn how to kind of bring them into the juggle and think about it all. And yes, like there's one thing that just can wipe you out. And we just have no control over it.
Kohler-Doman talks about how she fell into this strange new gig and talks about some of the pushback she's gotten on set. But first on the news banter, election night ratings down? Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my colleague in banter, Matt Bellany. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So things are still fluid as we are talking, but let's just talk a little bit about what happened on election night and thereafter. Weirdly, perhaps, for an election so closely watched with so much turnout, ratings were down on election night.
Yeah, and not just down. They were down pretty significantly, about 20%. The final number across all the networks on election night was about 57 million. And the broadcast networks were extremely down. So a lot of speculation has been why. Why in an election where there is record turnout and engagement by voters are fewer people tuning into the results? And I think there's a couple of theories. One is just the general migration away from television, the shrinking of the bundle, and the fact that more people are getting their news on digital outlets and Facebook and other means. Secondly, I think that anytime there's an incumbent involved, and you look back at ratings from previous elections, the incumbent typically generates less interest.
Not this time, but do go on.
Yeah, that might not be true this time just because of the extraordinary nature of what's going on. But the third one, I think, is the more telling one. I think the fact that because Florida was called early and it was clear that there was not going to be a resolution on election night, I think people, either from anxiety or frustration or whatever, decided that they just were going to tune out.
For me, at least, even though I'm a politics junkie, I just was overwhelmed by a number of counties and how did it compare with, 2016, and how many votes were still waiting to be counted. And it became so anxiety producing that I just, I took like long breaks and then dipped back in to see if anything material had happened.
Yeah, I mean, I ended up watching an episode of The West Wing because I just wanted some escapism fantasy of my fictional president. And they knew it was going to be a long slog because the media had telegraphed this pretty well. They had said, we're not going to know probably on election night. Interestingly, the breakdown showed that CNN was down on election night, but MSNBC and especially Fox News were up. So interesting, people were like in the rest of the country, very polarized in their news sources. Although I would say that the people tuning into Fox News on election night probably did not get the media product that they wanted to get.
Yes, because Fox, of course, called Arizona early, and that's been very controversial. But, when it comes to the election, even Fox is going to try and be aggressively correct. And even though the opinion hosts have had a lot to say about a lot of things, I think the unfortunate thing is that their guy who does that on Michigan is getting targeted by right-wing media. And there are Fox supporters chanting against Trump. And I think that kind of targeting is absolutely appalling. This guy is trying to do his job.
Well, look, the Murdochs and Roger Ailes specifically knew when they launched Fox News that in order to have an opinionated news outlet in this country, you had to have some fundamentals that had independence and credibility. And this election desk that Fox News has had is one of the better respected election desks in the country. And that's by design, because the Murdochs care about that. So, depending on what report you believe, either Trump himself or Jared Kushner called and screamed at Rupert Murdoch about this. But this is one of those instances where, Fox News typically toes the party line with the Trump administration. But here, it was very important to the Murdochs that it have independence, right or wrong, ultimately, but it be perceived as independent and not an arm of one of the campaigns.
Yes, I'll just say, as we speak, we don't know exactly whether they were right, but in Arizona, so, but they stood their ground. Let me pivot to another story in the news, which is ESPN and sports generally. You know, this has been a very tough time for sports, for ESPN. The ratings have also been really down, and ESPN lost 500 jobs this past week. They laid off about 300 people, and there were a bunch of other jobs where they were not going to fill openings. And of course, because they are grappling, as Jimmy Pitaro, who runs the thing, said, you know, this is a time where we are trying to adapt. The challenges are clear.
Yeah, the ESPN is running up against dual forces here. One is the decline of the traditional cable bundle, which has benefited ESPN for years and really made it the crown jewel of the Walt Disney Company because they could charge exorbitant carriage fees.
I complained many times, Matt,
to people who do not like sports. So even if you are Kim Masters and you don't watch any sports, you are still paying $5 a month.
I watch some, but I don't want to pay for it. Yeah.
Right. So that is declining, and that's producing less revenue for them. Secondly, is the sports rights fees are going through the roof, and ESPN is gearing up for new rounds of negotiations to keep the NFL, MLB, all of these various sports leagues, which are so important now because basically the only thing that people watch consistently on traditional cable and broadcast television is sports and news. And ESPN knows that in order to keep those sports leagues, they're going to have to ante up. So the costs are going to go up. And on the other side, the revenue is going down. And in the middle, you have layoffs.
Yeah. And they're trying to figure out how to sort of pivot to streaming. But the question is really, do live sports pivot to streaming?
Yeah. And, you know, they've had some promising numbers for the ESPN Plus app, which is being bundled with Disney Plus and Hulu by Disney. But again, that is a digital pennies to analog dollars type of situation where the revenue there is not as strong to offset what's going on the decline side. So, you know, like everything else we talk about on this show, it's going to be a long-term play. And in the meantime, it's a lot of change and difficult decisions.
Yes, I will note that once again, they are trying to make me bundle the thing in for Disney Plus and Hulu. So, but this time I don't have to do it. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, former editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. As Hollywood ramps up production, studios and filmmakers are wrestling with how to keep the industry running while implementing new protocols. These protocols are costly and cumbersome, with some crew members covered in expensive PPE from head to toe. At this point, there are standards in place, but there seems to be a lack of uniformity about how they're enforced. New jobs are springing up: COVID compliance officer, COVID manager, COVID compliance supervisor. The basic idea is the same: make sure everyone is following the rules. What's it like doing one of these jobs?
Fluid. Yeah. Everything is super fluid and evolving as it goes.
That's Danica Kohler-Doman. She's been working in Hollywood for more than two decades and has been a production coordinator on films small and large, including Spider-Man 3 and Pacific Rim Uprising. When the pandemic hit, things became uncertain for her, just as they did for many workers in Hollywood and across the country. But before long, she found work in the new COVID economy. What were you and what are you? How did the transition happen?
Well, so I am a production supervisor, which is akin to a unit production manager, works with the producers and accounting and the studios to schedule and budget and lay the groundwork for all the creatives to be able to do their job. And then recently, I have just done three additional photographies as a COVID manager, just kind of facilitating all the new guidelines and protocols that have to be done to make a safe working environment.
So you is this a thing that you shifted to because there was demand?
I think I fell into it. So the first additional photography I did, I was a production supervisor, and we quickly saw the writing on the wall that we needed other elements in to kind of support this new department that is being created. And then the two other shows that I did, I was asked to come on as a COVID manager. And so I did it. And yes, I will do more. I also probably will go back to production supervising. I don't know if, like, everything is fluid and whatever comes. It's a pretty beastly role.
So I have heard, yes.
there is a lot of facets to it, and it's being figured out still. Like, it is constantly evolving.
In some cases, I would think that, you know, a director might want to do something that is very difficult from the compliance standpoint, and the power generally lies with the director.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, it's still kind of the beginning stages, so I think everyone's still getting their feet wet and finding what they can get away with or what they can do and not do. Like I said, again, the people that I worked with were all kind of really wanting to keep a safe environment and do it safely. And I was not working on shows that had huge amounts of moving parts on the sets. Like, I mean, I can't imagine doing like a musical right now. You know what I mean? Like, where you have dancing and singing and all, and like all those, and how you want to shoot it and how you do it. Like, I was very fortunate that, like, we were on a stage and we were just trying to figure out how to do the small moving pieces on a stage without all these exterior elements coming in and adding layers to what we were doing.
I mean, do you know, do you have an inner idea, like, if I am asked to do this, I will do that. You know, I will not allow. Or do you have a recourse if you say, you know, I mean, potentially you could go to the AD, and who's supposed to be responsible for safety. I don't know. Is there a roadmap for what to do in those situations?
There is a lot of paperwork that has to be done before you actually get the clearance to do your shoot. Even though we have, like, a skeleton of a plan or a one line, you get a more in-depth plan of how it can be executed in the COVID world. So hopefully there are certain things that come up that you say, oh, that could be an issue. How do we deal with that? There are things about, you know, sex scenes or kissing scenes or things like that, which can, you know, right now are considered dangerous or hazardous, you know, and there's ramped up testing there. I mean, there's all sorts of things that are being practiced or tried to see what works. And I think it's just all kind of trial and error when it comes to the safety of it and how you keep it safe. I think the biggest thing is keeping the amount of people that are interacting with each other that are unprotected down and trying to keep them in a bubble. But at the same time, there's not much you can do to what people go home and do.
I think that's a big problem, yeah.
And I know in some countries or other states, there's like the quarantine bubble of the crew. And I think people are trying out all these different practices and seeing what is the most effective. I think intense testing, you know, testing every day or three times a week at least gives you a frame of reference of where people are at when they come to set. And I think just you have to have open communication, and especially about what wants to be accomplished in the filming and then seeing if it can be accomplished in this new normal of COVID.
Have you had people that you are working with who are, you know, there are people who say this is a hoax or it's just the flu, notwithstanding the fact that that's clearly not true. Have you had pushback, or is it awkward sometimes to go up and say, I need you to not do that?
I haven't. Crews just want to work in a safe environment, and that is what I have found. Like, there's not a lot of pushback. They just kind of, you tell them what has to be done, and they do it. There are times when I think when the hours get very long and the conditions, it gets wearing PPE that long, as we've heard in, you know, all the newscasts with healthcare workers, that it can take a toll on you, you know, just wearing the masks and wearing the face shields and wearing the gowns and et cetera. And it's just a lot in certain departments, especially like on set, when there's cast on set that can't wear PPE because they're in character and they're in costume, and being filmed, it just, it can weigh. So you do get that, them wanting to figure out, is this really necessary for this scene? Or do I have to wear all of this? Or can we adjust it? But for the most part, you're just getting cranky, a little cranky and tired at the end of the day because it's been a long day where they're wearing stuff. But otherwise, they're pretty open to wearing. They're pretty open to the crazy amount of testing. We didn't get complaints about that because I think people felt that it was a safe environment. We didn't get in any of the, like, this is all dumb. I also think that they know to go back to work, this is what their unions are requiring and that they have to kind of, that's what they have to do to be compliant.
Coming up after a short break, Kohler Doman tells us why the thought of working on a big production gives her heart palpitations. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to Danica Kohler Doman, a production coordinator who's found work in the COVID economy that's sprung up in Hollywood. She's been working as a COVID manager, one of many new roles in the industry. Of course, every project has different demands, which means that every production has to deal with different challenges when it comes to COVID protocols. There's a lot of PPE, frequent testing, and of course, quarantining when test results come back positive. When a few people on the set of Jurassic World Dominion tested positive, the crew quarantined for 2 weeks. The production had already scaled down after an outbreak on location in Malta. In her new role, Kohler Doman has worked on a few projects for studios like Sony and Netflix, though the shoots were much smaller. There are different zones on the set, right? Where people, the level of PPE and whatnot is, I've heard the hair and makeup people have to, are, you know, obviously for obvious reasons, just completely covered, like they're going into a ward of COVID when they work.
They are.
And I guess that is just what they have to do now, right? I mean, it's a strange thing. Somebody sent me a photo of a tent with the little hair and makeup thing, and these people are absolutely covered.
Yeah, no, they are. They have to wear a lot. Hair and makeup, I think, probably, and costume, pretty much have to wear the most, but hair and makeup, because when they're applying the makeup, you know, the actor's is not wearing any coverings. And I think that's the big issue, is that if one person is not wearing it, you have to be kind of extra covered to protect yourself as well as protect the actor. Does that make sense?
Yes, of course. I mean, I just wonder how tired the hair and makeup and costume people get.
Very. I was doing some stuff that was over the summer and, you know, in the heat. And if you're shooting outside, like, it just, you know, it starts to weigh on you. It's the added layers of what has to come in because of the duress that you're putting your crew a little bit under for this. And, you know, and then you have your safety people kind of advising on, you know, we're shooting a scene outside, so the ventilation is good, but you have your hair and makeup people that are still completely PPE up in full, like, zone A or performance zone PPE, because the actors are not, you know, in PPE. It's a fine line. You have to make sure there's water and that there's a cooling tent around and that, you know, they can get relief. I mean, I know some of the stuff we did where we would establish kind of like a green zone within our little, I guess it's in your zone A, which is your performance zone, which is where the actors are and your director and your camera. And then a little kind of rest area for the crew. And our AD was really good about, you know, kind of giving little 5-minute breaks for everyone to just go and just have a breath without the mask, or just like an area where they could kind of disrobe and then re-robe when they came back to set.
So I'm told that testing is the biggest challenge. It costs, I'm told, anywhere from $75 to $600 if you are, and that's for concierge service going to an actor's house, that anybody in that performer zone near the cast was has to be tested 3 times a week, and that it adds anywhere from 6% to 15% to the budget. Somebody mentioned to me a show that a big show that's spending $15 million. Does that sound like all familiar to you? Do you, is it your view that testing actually is the hardest thing?
Testing is hard on many different levels. It's expensive. I think it's the only way people have a frame of reference of a starting point. And you have to continuously do it. You also have to wait for the results, and we're in the middle of a pandemic. So you could get results within 24 hours, but you could also get results within 96 hours or longer, you know? And after a certain period of time, it becomes null. So you have to test again. If like someone's results don't come back, within like, I think 72 hours, you have to retest. And getting the supply, it's the supplies, it's all of it. It's the cornerstone.
I get the feeling that some people are looking to make money off of this.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, the amount of companies that have, I mean, there is a huge amount of companies that are coming in that kind of are one-stop shops that you can come to hire to help facilitate and do all of that. And
but I gather that then you may be paying a markup for your PPE, for example.
Correct.
You know, capitalism, what can I say?
Well, and that definitely is more, I think, in the independent world. A lot of the studios have created their own relationships with testing vendors, PPE vendors, and you do go through that route. So, and that might be a markup, it might not, but they have their whole infrastructure already done. Where with the independents, they don't have that. So I think once you start on the show, you have to source a testing vendor, probably labs, where you can get PPE and all of the other things that ensue with it.
This is just going to be much worse for the independents. Like,
oh, it's terrible.
I don't know to what extent the independents, I mean, you've done a lot in the independent world. Are they shooting?
I think they are. I hear of some. I don't know how they get over the hump of costs that come with COVID. It's something like 20 or 25% of the budget. But if like, let's say you have like a $10 to $15 million budget, how do you put in place all these new protocols? Especially testing itself could kind of blow your whole budget away, I think. I think filmmakers are resilient and find a way forward. And find a way to make it work.
So it seems like ultimately what you have on a set now is like almost two crew groups from two different worlds, right? You have people who are unfamiliar with production and people who are only familiar with production. And I guess it's partly your job to sort of weave them together.
Yeah, that like the people that are coming from a space of a medical background or like a fire safety background, and they're coming in and maybe they have a little experience with film or not, just getting them acclimated to what each department does, how you could have crews working here prepping for them for the shooting crew to come, and how it all interweaves with each other, which is, you know, and that's it's training people on set.
Is it like the Sharks and the Jets, or do they get along?
Is it like the Sharks and the Jets? I don't know. I mean, maybe. I'm sure it's competitive. I strive for us to succeed and hopefully have a safe working place. So I'm very team-oriented and collaborative and communicative. So I share. But it is, you know, there's times where it's, you know, frustrating. Because something you'll have a shorthand with other people where you have to kind of explain the whole process in other instances.
You know, there was so much noise around the Jurassic World and their protocols, and took over a whole hotel. And, you know, that one of the producers gave an interview to my colleague and then, you know, about we're doing this and we're doing that. It sounded so good. And then they had to shut down. And that must be something that, I don't know. hate to say it this way, but kind of haunts your nightmares, or is, have you just gotten acclimated?
No, I don't. I do think you get comfortable and then something happens, you know? It's just there's so many moving pieces to an industry that already has a ton of moving pieces. So you just have to learn how to kind of bring them into the juggle and think about it all. And yes, like there's one thing that just can wipe you out. And we just have no control over it. So I think you have to push forward and you just have to kind of do what you can do. And then if you're faced with it, then you have to roll with that and move forward and figure out how to clean it or how to get you back up and running as soon as possible again.
Have you had to stop at any point so far?
No, I have not.
You're just like, don't jinx it, Kim. Why are you talking to me about this?
No, but it's, you know, like I said, I've been doing additional photographies, and I'm not saying that they're just a lot smaller. Like Jurassic World is a full show, and the thought of a full show kind of gives me heart palpitations because there's just so much going on. And you can have a full show, like your full shows aren't on stage. They're like different locations. You're traveling people. You've got like four different units. You've got, you know what I mean? It's huge. And the crew size is huge. And it's just, it's wrangling all of it. And I mean, like something on Jurassic World, I'm sure the COVID department is a huge team. Like you probably have representatives from like locations and the AD team and the transportation team. And then you have all your craft service people. And then you have like a ton of medics. And then you have probably a ton of production people that are solely doing COVID, you know, and then you have your compliance officers and you have your safety officers. It's, you know, just kind of manning all of it.
So is there a clear, consistent thing that qualifies a COVID person, manager, or whatever, or because in the early going, of course, it was random. And I've seen accounts of people trying to bring in their production assistants and say, you're in charge. So are we evolving on that front?
I hope so. I think it depends on the budget. It depends on the producers. It depends on what kind of team it is. Like, hopefully they bring in the right people. I have heard of people bringing in a bunch of PAs to do stuff, and I just think that's wrong because I just don't think they have the wider knowledge just of how it all works. They're at the bottom of the totem pole. And I do think, like, here's the lowest paid person of the bunch with shouldering that huge responsibility.
Yes, I'm amazed that would be permitted in any kind of semi-professional production even.
Oh, it's surprising sometimes.
Yes, Hollywood gets oftentimes people in the business get around. So I don't know. Do you have any idea? I mean, we don't know when we're getting out of this. It doesn't seem like soon. So is this where you see your career at this point? Or
I don't know. I think I need a healthy mixture. I mean, look, I think whatever I do, whether it's COVID managing or production supervising, COVID is going to be a part of both of the jobs. One's just going to have it a little more heavy than the other. But it is. It's a lot. And I think for a healthy frame of mind, I might need to balance it out. Like maybe COVID here, maybe back to supervising here.
Right. A little COVID break.
Yeah. It's all encompassing and it's full on and it's not, it's evolving. And hopefully 6 months down the road, we find better ways of moving forward with it. And we figure out what works and what doesn't work a little bit more. But I don't know. Like I said, I mean, it's a constantly evolving process. And I think just that evolution, I mean, even just answers to questions and guidelines kind of change every day or up for interpretation, you know.
What a job you have. Danica Kohler-Doman is a production supervisor who's working as a COVID manager in Hollywood. Thank you so much for talking to us about this.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And that's The Business. Kevin Tidmarsh produced and edited today's program with help from Desmond Taylor and Mario Diaz. Paul Smith mixed the show. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts on the KCRW app. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.